I'm a man that works with his hands, and working with my hands means I own a lot of tools. And when you have a lot of tools, believe me, it's hard to keep up with where I bought them, how much they cost, and sometimes even where I put them. Well, until now. Now I use SiriSafe. SiriSafe not only helps me keep up with the serial numbers and receipts, but also if there's an extended warranty and where it's stored. I also use it to make notes, because a lot of people like to borrow my tools, like my brother. This lets me know what he borrowed and how long ago he borrowed it, just in case he forgets to return it. SiriSafe, helping protect what's valuable to you.
Visit us at www.siri-safe.com. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram links are available on our website.
This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my idol.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Welcome, everybody, to the Week in Review, a very special Week in Review, as we, as promised, are bringing back Mr. and Mrs. Rocky T. And they were supposed to be on Monday night. I got crazy Monday night in my life, so I kicked it down the road to this Week in Review, and really glad to have them on. You guys know who they are, especially Mr. Rocky T, who has done several co-host shows with Michael Gross and done some of the Wrestle Magic shows. But I'm really excited not just to have Mr. Rocky T, but also his wife, Kimberly. So first of all, let me introduce them and just say hello. And are you guys excited for WrestleMania? Are you ready for 2.5 weeks from right now?
Matt, we are excited to be here with you today. It was actually a little blessing that we got to kick it down the road too today. We get to talk a little bit more about what happened during the week of wrestling. But it has been a long time coming for Mr. Rocky T to come on. I'm finally glad that we had the opportunity to. So without further ado, everybody listening, Mrs. Rocky T.
Hi, everyone.
She's a little shy. She's been wanting to come on, but then, of course, we're here at the moment and she's getting a little bashful.
All good.
Yeah, we've been together about 2 years. She's been a fan since back in the day, but of course, like most of us, you know, it wasn't cool to be a fan in high school, so she fell out of touch. And of course, into her adulthood, didn't really keep up. But, you know, casual fan coming in around WrestleMania season like we are in now. And then, you know, we got together about 2.5 years ago. And of course, wrestling's always on my TV every Monday and every Friday for SmackDown. So she started to get into it little by little and started to, you know, have her favorites and then have the ones that she dislikes. And here we are, you know, after our first, you know, actually our third Raw, and we've already gone to a Rumble. So she's deep into being a wrestling fan again, and we're happy about that, at least here in the Rocky T household.
That's a lot of the events to go to in such a short time. I'm really jealous. I mean, they talk about and a Rumble. So, I mean, obviously with you guys going to Raw this past week, we're going to dive into that and your experiences and the good and bad that came with the show. But Kimberly, I got to ask you, you know, since you've been a fan for such a short amount of time, what are some of your favorite memories, even though it's been just a short amount of time, when you look back and, you know, you're just like, oh, man, I really love this storyline or that storyline. Do you have any favorites so far?
I think whenever I first started watching again, it was the Sami Zayn kind of like trying to be into the Bloodline, and then they finally gave him the chance and he was the honorary Uso. So that's when I started watching again, and I just kind of got hooked into loving the Bloodline so much.
Well, that's not a bad storyline to love. It's one that I think they should have still crowned Sami Zayn as champion. I still believe that to this day, because we would have avoided all the conundrum that happened with Roman Reigns because of the title being involved. He wouldn't have had the title. It was a perfect opportunity to crown Sami Zayn, but they didn't. And here we are. And now we have a storyline that is, I think, even better than most of us could have expected, even though many of us who are Rocky fans wanted Rock versus Roman. I think that this Hollywood version of The Rock, now, Kimberly, you haven't seen this version of The Rock yet, unless you go back and watch from 2003. But how are you enjoying, since you've never seen this version of The Rock, how do you like this version of The Rock right now?
I mean, I like it in a way. I mean, I've always been a Rock fan, regardless if he was good, bad. I mean, I loved him in all his movies, even though I know a lot of people kind of boo him. But I mean, I like where this is going. And I mean, I just think it's hilarious how he's talking on the shows now lately. I feel like this is what we needed growing up, to be honest.
We had it, but in a sense, I don't know if you feel the same way, Matt, but after his last few promos with him, with the TKO merger, with the Vince out, with him at the board, does it kind of feel like, I feel like The Rock's kind of ushering the PG-14 era.
Mm.
We're kind of moving away, especially with all the talks of what happened in Arizona. Like, the way he's talking makes me feel like more wrestlers are going to come out and be able to, you know, be a little bit more lenient with whatever they're saying.
Well, I think you could be right. However, I'm hearing from reports from, you know, I'm not going to say various sources. It's the sources we all use to get wrestling news, that some of the talent are not happy with what The Rock's doing because they feel like there's a double standard that they have to abide by PG rules and The Rock can kind of do what he wants. So there seems to be some tension. And if that's the case, I would just tell those talents, I mean, look, suck it up. I mean, honestly, only because this is something that's going to draw more eyeballs to the product. In turn, you're going to get paid more for WrestleMania because WrestleMania is paid out by total gate and then it's divided up. So The Rock's bringing more money into your paycheck. The fact that it's working, like the fans love it. There hasn't been any significant backlash. It works. When he does it, it's hilarious. It feels like The Rock. I understand that the cursing for him may be a little bit more TV-14 or PG-14, as you say, and then everybody else has to abide by the typical PG rules. But honestly, you don't need that. If I'm a talent, then I feel like I need to curse to get over. Then I think you don't know how to really get over. I mean, honestly, so there has been some tension apparently backstage that he's abiding by one set of rules while the other talent are abiding by another.
I mean, the man at the head of the board, of any board, probably does have his own set of rules. So if it's going to be him coming in for the time that he's doing his storyline and he's going to push the envelope, then so be it, right? But I still feel like he may be ushering in that eventually it may be for the whole locker room to be able to let a little bit loose on the mic, which would be good for TV all around because everybody knows, you know, the Attitude Era. That's something that, we still talk about it to this day. It resonates with us so much because of the freedom that they had, and we miss it, and we do. So it's great to see him out being Hollywood Rock, and, you know, especially that in 2024.
Yeah, I would agree. I would absolutely agree. Well, we'll get back to that when we talk about SmackDown, but since you guys attended Raw, I thought it was a pretty damn good Raw, especially the end. We'll talk about the main event shortly as well, mm-hmm. with Chad Gable and Sami Zayn, my God. But from your experiences, just overall, before we get into details, did you like the event? Do you feel like it was one of the better events you've attended? How would you rank it? That kind of thing.
I think it was the best one, honestly. I think it's because we got better seats this time.
Yeah, so we were actually almost in the same section that you were when you had, you know, went. So we were in section 108, which was the hard side of the camera to the right, which is the, you know, the corner post of the ring. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had a very great view. So considering that we were closer this time, we consider this our best experience because the seats were bigger. You know, they have the private, the food and the private tables there and those sweet boxes. So it was very nice. So I think, but overall, as far as the whole show itself, being a couple weeks out from Mania, I still think it was, you know, pretty well put together show, especially since we got, you know, number one contender for the Intercontinental title. You know, we had, you know, a lot of other stuff that is going to be expanding to the stories of Mania. But before, last year we went, it was the Go-Ho Shom to SummerSlam, which was underwhelming. And before that, it was just an August show. But this one, considerably, just because of where we were sitting, like, there's no way we can go back to the seats, Matt. We can't go back. I was able to spread my legs in these seats.
Like, and we had our belts.
And we had our belts, which, listeners, if you're out there, it was fun. A lot of people had belts, Matt. A lot of people. I mean, I've never seen so many belts at any show I've ever been. And like, it wasn't just like the world title. It was like genres of belts. Like you have a group of guys that had like the John Cena spinner belt with the John Cena US title belt. You had guys with the old WWF title from the 90s with the white Intercontinental title. You had a group of ECW fans that had the ECW titles. It was just, you had everybody. It was amazing. Like even the kids, all the kids.
They were handing out belts for free.
It felt like they were handing out. Yeah.
Do you think some people were, do you think people mostly brought them from home, or do you think some people actually purchasing them there?
So this is also the large merch stand that we was by the where we were sitting was the largest group of belts I've ever seen. I took a picture. I think I counted like about 24 different belts.
Oh my God.
They had a lot of different titles that were like the old championship, but different color straps. And there was even a Houston Astro custom belt that was there as well for Houston fans. They had the mini belt and they had the replica, you know, adult size belt. But there were so many belts. I saw this one lady, she purchased the Rock Brahma Bull belt. They had a lot of belts different. They had the Stone Cold belt. I mean, they've had belts like all the way back to the 80s. Like there was a lot of different ones. They had the custom belt for Taker, custom belt for HBK. I mean, there was just so many.
Even when we went back to go buy another program, all the belts were gone. So they definitely sold out.
But just walking in, the amount of belts that we saw, it was overwhelming. But to the listeners, I don't know if I'll ever do that again. Like it was a lot carrying the belt, especially the Roman's belt, because it's so much more heavier than the woman's one, considerably heavier.
Yeah, that's great. But wow. I would definitely take my belt back again. That was fun.
Usually I got to say the merch stands are underwhelming at best and there's always long lines and, you know, that is, that you guys got spoiled and you got spoiled with your seats. So you've had an experience now that, like you said, you can't downgrade yourself now.
There was one piece of merch that as soon as I saw it, I told Kimmy that you were going to hate it.
Oh no.
You wanted to buy it.
I was going to buy it. And so I could, you know, just so I could have it here. They have Cody Rhodes' dog stuffed animal.
No, they don't.
I swear. I'm going to send you a picture when we're done. They do.
Pharaoh?
I should have sent it to you already. Yep, Pharaoh. I forgot how much. It was probably like $40.
It's like, oh my God, Matt's going to hate me. I was like, don't do it.
I
don't want my show. But yeah, they actually have a Pharaoh stuffed animal dog.
Oh,
well, they did here.
My soul already hurts.
They're pushing it. Yeah, I know.
Okay. Oh my God. Okay. Well, well, let's move on. I do have another question about just demographic. I always like to ask this because I'm curious as to, was a lot of families? Was it mostly men, women, a total mix? How would you categorize the type of people that were there, the age and that kind of thing?
It was definitely family oriented. I mean, it was the last week of the rodeo here in Houston. So, I mean, there was a lot of country artists. Travis Scott was there.
In our particular section, there were some families. There was kids next to us on both sides and behind us, actually all around us.
Yeah.
So a lot of families are in our section. I actually did see more couples this time than I did the previous times. And, you know, of course you have your older male, you know, 30s guys in their 30s in their groups. But I guess where we were, it just felt more family oriented just because you could hear the kids chanting so much more predominantly in the section.
Yeah, that's the general sense I've gotten too, not just here and up in Albany too, but in everyone I've talked to, it seems like family, family, family. And that's honestly kind of a cool thing. I mean, you also have to realize that the PG label has been pushed a little beyond what PG used to be. I remember when I was PG, when I would, you know, was that age, PG meant like no cussing at all. I mean, like now what PG means is just, you know, moderate amount of cussing. Sometimes you go over it, but some sexual content. So kids, I think, are being exposed to a little more under what PG means today. But that said, it's still cool to see the families and fathers and sons and daughters and mothers and whoever, you know, just coming to a wrestling event together. I am seeing a lot more of that. And that is really cool. Now, as far as the wrestling goes, before Raw happened, did you see any of the matches beforehand?
The pre-show, well, we were actually standing in the merch line food line. So what we did here, actually, we caught the tail end of it. It was Chelsea Green versus Natalya on the main event. The crowd was into it. A lot of energy. Chelsea gets her chance. She's such a showman or showwoman. She really puts on an act very well. Even for a pre-show or a main event taping, she was still, I mean, of course, in the ring with Natalya, a veteran, but Chelsea Green is just, or at least in Houston, it was very over, and she's definitely over in my heart.
Did the Samantha Irvin introduce her with the Chelsea Green?
Yeah, she did.
Okay, good, good. That's yeah, that's key. Okay,
it is key. I know that's one of my favorite. My favorite. I just absolutely love it.
Awesome. So okay, well, let's get into Raw here because we still have SmackDown to cover as well. But with Monday Night Raw, Drew McIntyre coming out, and you guys gave him the what treatment? Everyone seems to, and he also then trolled you guys and said, "Say what if you're glad I took out CM Punk?" And people still said what. And so, like, they just can't help themselves. But how did the in-person reaction to Drew feel? Did it feel generally positive and then turn negative? Like, what was the reaction to Drew McIntyre throughout his promo before Seth came out?
I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like it almost turned in the ring. Like, it actually turned endearing, right? You feel him trying to, you know, pick up the crowd and pick up the city. And then, but you... In a weird way, you kind of respect him, but at the same time, you know, if things are falling into his lap, he's taking advantage. You can't really hate the guy or fault him for it, but I mean, I felt like the crowd was with him, even though we were giving him the what treatment. It didn't seem like it was coming to my section from my section too much, but it just seems like we were just kind of doing it to him. It's like we were smiling. I mean, we were laughing with him, not at him, you know, if that makes any sense.
No, that does. I mean, it just shows you how over Drew McIntyre's heel character is.
Yeah, doesn't matter what he does or says right now.
Yeah, he's just so damn good at what he's doing. He's believable. He's interesting. It's a natural progression of his character. Everything about it. I mean, I know that, you know, obviously you and I like it, but based on the crowd reaction and the in-person, it sounds like a lot of fans with you with the thousands in attendance as well did. So. Now,
there wasn't any predominantly boos, you know, anything distinctively for it.
It didn't sound like there was overwhelming negative reaction for Drew. And I was wondering if in person it sounded different. It sounded generally positive. I'm like, oh, well, maybe in person it sounds different, but okay. Okay. So how did the crowd react to Seth Rollins and you know, his interaction with Drew? How did I'm imagining you guys sung along. I heard that, but how did you like the interaction with Seth and with Drew at the open?
Finally, glad that what they were speaking about in the ring was about the world title, even though he did mention, you know, the tag match and what's going on with The Rock on that side. But you know, the crowd's always with Seth; they're always singing his song, and they still hang on his every word. But him telling Drew that, you know, the reason why he hasn't got any attention is because he doesn't see him as a threat. Now, when he said that, you could feel, you know, almost like the shiver go through the crowd. Like, you know, that was like a real low blow. And I know I felt it. It hit my heart. I know it, you know, assumingly hit Drew's heart too. But that was a line that I think is going to, they're going to play that probably again in the video package before the match at Mania. I'm sure that's going to be one of the taglines in the video package. But overall, the crowd, I think they were, you know, behind both men, regardless.
Yeah, I would agree with that from what it sounded like on television, you know, and I thought that Drew was going to snap after he said that line. I mentioned on my Raw review, I said, oh, man, if he had just mentioned anything about his family, because that's what made him snap against Sami Zayn, just mention anything about his family, how they'd be ashamed of him, and he would have just lost his mind. But I do like I actually like the restraint shown by McIntyre. You know, I actually, it makes you want to see this happen even further. And I have been very underwhelmed with the build for the World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania. It has been put on the back burner. It's been put to the side. It's been kind of forgotten, and that's a shame. But it's nice to see this, at least for a week, be put at the forefront at the beginning of Raw. It's the biggest thing they wanted to talk about tonight. And hopefully this continues because, again, it's Seth and Drew. We've seen it before, but the build to it so far, with only a couple weeks left to build, has been generally underwhelming, at least from the perspective of what a main event of WrestleMania should be.
I agree with you. And that's why I think, I know everybody has been predicting everybody assumes that the tag match is going to be the main event of night one. And you know, before we got on here recording, we were talking, and I told you what I think they should do. And I think the tag match should open night one, because with everything that Drew has been doing to win, as far as taking advantage of the distractions and everything falling into his lap, with Seth doing the double duty on one night, having them go through the tag match at the beginning of the night, and then have them end the night with that match, that would play very well into the story of, you know, Drew taking advantage of opportunity. So him winning the title that way, I don't think would necessarily put an asterisk on it or disdain it too much. I think it would actually play well into that, just because of the victory he's gotten over the last few months with all those opportunities falling into his lap.
Yeah, that honestly does sound like a much better plan for me. Get The Rock, at the beginning of the show. I understand the argument against it, as we've talked about before the show began. It's just, okay, The Rock's wrestling for the first time in, you know, 12 years or whatever it's been. I understand the need for that, the temptation to put it in the main event. But also, this is not going to be The Rock's last match. I mean, there is a report that he has a movie schedule that he's actually going to be filming from May to August. So that's what, a few months during the summer, he won't be able to be wrestling, but there are other matches he could have down the line, especially obviously with the most obvious Roman Reigns. There will be eventually a one-on-one slated for WrestleMania 41. So this isn't going to be The Rock's one and done match. So, okay, fine. It's the first time he's wrestling, but this match is not really about The Rock. This match is about the stipulations for the second night in night two with Cody Rhodes. Like, that really should be the focus, and not the fact that The Rock's wrestling for the first time in 12 years. It's a big deal, but the main event of WrestleMania honestly should be the biggest deal. So I would agree that that should open the show. The only argument against Drew interfering in that, which I think many people believe he will, is that's not going to hurt Seth, because Cody is going to be the one who's being hurt by this, not Seth. Seth is the one who's just helping Cody. If he screws over Seth, Seth's just like, well, I just lost the match. Oh, well, I'll face Drew later on tonight or the next night. Whereas Cody's the one who's going to be hurt by that, not Seth, who he's attacking. So, I mean, it could happen, but I don't know. So many different possibilities with this whole bloodline rules. And we've already heard all the people that could interfere everywhere, from Stone Cold Steve Austin to John Cena to Jey Uso. I mean, there's just so much that could happen in this.
Well, part of my concern is that even though it has been over, you know, a long time since Rock's been in the ring, you do have the other three guys in the match are three of the best in the business. But with the X factor of Rock, you know, having to shake some ring rust off, what if the match is not that great? If you put the match at the beginning of Mania, you can still, and it's not that great or up to par to our standards, you can still close the night strong with the world title match. Whether it be Seth's match or Rhea's match, you can still put a world title in the main event, which is the way it should be.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, the title matches should be the ones main eventing the shows. That's why they're here. That's why they're competing. That's why we believe the talent are there to win championships. So yeah, it should be showcased on night one. I would agree that the women should get a main event spot. And I just, again, this is all speculative. We don't know for sure if it's main eventing night one, but it sounds pretty damn, set in stone that it's going to be main eventing night one. But all right, well, let's move on, given that we got a lot to cover here. Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan, how did you guys enjoy this match live?
Again, the crowd was very into this. So the kids that were sitting around us, you could hear the kids saying, "Let's go, Liv," like the whole match. And then every time Liv would hit a maneuver in the ring, you'd have the grown men saying, "It's over, Becky." There was this guy with a Russian accent. He's saying, "It's over, Becky," every time Liv would hit a move. And then there was another guy on the opposite side of us that was saying, "Let's go, Becky." So it seems like the adult males were in favor of Becky, while all the younger teenagers or kids were cheering for Liv. But it was a very very exciting match, considering how long it went. I didn't think it was going to be that long, but a very good match.
I would agree. This match really, I think, delivered in a way that I didn't expect Liv to live up to, and pun intended, I guess. I didn't think that she really would, because I haven't seen really, really good matches out of her. And, you know, there are very few and far between, and maybe that's because partly her opponents, or you know, partly that she just isn't simply as skilled as the other women. I mean, that's okay. Everybody's not on the same level playing field. But this was really a good match for both women. It was a good match, even in defeat for Liv, because it showed that she's not just this kind of, you know, 5 foot underdog all the time, that she can bring Becky Lynch to the limit. She can actually potentially beat somebody at the top of the card. And even though she didn't win, I think it did help her a lot. And after the match, it seemed as if Liv and Becky Lynch, especially backstage, showed that they have some mutual respect, that they're going to put this little rivalry behind them. So, you know, obviously after the match, we did get Rhea Ripley coming out, and she congratulated Lynch, and a mommy chant broke out. So when Rhea Ripley came out, what was the reaction there?
So, of course, just like in every other arena, as soon as that music hits, loud pop, everybody to their feet, everybody's phones out. And it was sad. You know, it was, she came out just for a few words. You know, we were expecting some contact, maybe not expecting, maybe hoping for it. But we know that they're building up to the match, and, you know, they don't want to put, you know, have them put hands on each other yet, which is good. But mommy always gets in. Standing ovation from us, whether we're in person or at home. I mean, even when we're at home, we stand up and clap sometimes. I mean, she's literally hanging on our wall. We have her shirts, her merch. She's, we're still waiting for that Rhea Ripley action figure to come out. I know you want to see a picture of that when we finally get it. We finally did get Damian and Finn Balor, and the action figure Damian Priest is going to be released here in May. So we're waiting for that mommy one, but like I said, anytime mommy's is out or on camera, whether it's backstage or in the ring, I mean, we're hanging on her every word, and just like everybody else.
She is a very intriguing character, one that I don't think is going to be outshined by Becky Lynch. I understand Becky Lynch is a quote-unquote bigger star on paper, but this is Rhea Ripley's moment. You know, this is not, I think, going to be breaking news to anybody, but there is, to me, almost no chance that Rhea Ripley loses at WrestleMania. There's no need to. It feels like her run is just really finally starting now, even though it's been almost a year since she's had it. It feels like they're really paying attention to it now. She seems to be separated a little bit more from Judgment Day than before. It's not just about Judgment Day business. It's now a little bit more about Rhea. So, you know, she's the crowd is just really getting with her. And, you know, she's getting more comfortable on the mic and understanding who and what she is. And I don't see a need. I don't know how, you know, either of you feel that Rhea Ripley should or would have any reason to lose at WrestleMania. I don't care who her opponent is at this point.
So I honestly believe that she's going to break Bianca Belair's record for the longest woman champion. I believe... I know somebody out there is yelling, but I believe the record for her is 1 year and 3 months. So I think Bianca had it for about 15 months for when she broke it last year. So undoubtedly, Rhea's going to break that. Honestly, I think she could even double that. Maybe Roman Reigns-esque title reign here, now that they're just finally giving the attention, giving her some credible opponents. I think now she could break off and... She started as a heel in a heel group, but eventually I think she could, you know, break away into a babyface role and continue her reign, the other half of her reign. And I don't see anybody on the roster right now besides probably Bianca that is slated to be the one to take it off of her eventually, or that could do it anyways. What do you think?
I can't see Rhea being a babyface though. I don't know.
Remember, she kind of already is, right? We're cheering for her. She's in a heel group, heel tactics still, to an extent. But eventually...
I like her no matter what.
Yes. We're going to get to, you know, eventually, yeah. It's like she can do no wrong. I mean, you feel the same way, don't you, Matt?
Yeah, I don't... Honestly, she doesn't have to do anything to turn babyface. The fans are deciding to just... We like this person. We're getting behind them. And that's what just happens. I mean, think about The Rock. I mean, that it just happens because the fans will it to happen. So, I mean, if they're ever going to, quote-unquote, turn Rhea Ripley, I don't know what I would change about her. Everything about her, no matter what they're doing, the fans are cheering. So, like, I wouldn't change anything. It's obviously working. The crowd is behind her. I mean, there are sections of people, small, that still boo her, but that's with anybody almost. So, I honestly wouldn't touch a thing with her. I wouldn't change any formula. You know, I just want to see her actually, like you said, her and Bianca Belair to me is so intriguing, way more than Becky Lynch, because
it's the ace in the hole, man. It's the ace in the hole.
I know. And they teased it last year and you're like, okay, that's a foreshadowing for this year. And they didn't get to it.
Well, so, what was it? Rhea had that dental emergency, or she had that medical leave. That's why they had to postpone that. And then, you know, with Rhea becoming dominant the way she is, they know that's their ace, you know. So let them get through Becky. Like I had mentioned on the mailbag, this will be Rhea's second victory over one of the four horsewomen at back-to-back manias. So I believe this is going to completely cement her probably right at that Hall of Fame tier. I think maybe that Becky victory. I know Becky's not as hot as she should be to make it seem like a credible victory. But when you look at Becky's accolades and what she's done for the business, it is. You know, mm-hmm. when you see it on paper, it doesn't look like that on screen because Becky hasn't been as exciting as a character lately and felt stale with the man character. But when you see it on paper, this victory over Becky and then the victory over Charlotte, the queen last year, that's going to set up Rhea. Like, probably going forward, she probably won't even need a belt to be relevant anymore. You know how they say the wrestler makes the belt and not the other way around? Well, I don't think Rhea will need a belt, but they are going to keep it on her for a while.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the most impactful runs of her career. She'll probably lose it at some point and then regain it. And she's still relatively young. She's in her mid-20s, I believe. I mean,
like 27?
Yeah. So she's, I mean, barely into, okay, the mid to barely late 20s. She's got a good 15 years if she wants to. So she's got a hell of a career coming up. But this is going to be the one that establishes her, cements her in that limelight of, like you said, Hall of Fame. I mean, there's an argument to be made, even if she quit tomorrow, that she might be already there.
You got NXT champion, NXT tag, women's tag titles, WWE women's tag titles. People forget, didn't she win the Raw title her first night on Raw when she debuted?
I think so.
Right. She didn't hold it that long, but she did win it that first night. So with this title victory, I believe she's now a two-time women's champion and Royal Rumble winner. So, yeah, you're right. There's a case to be made.
Whew. Well, from one woman to another here, another women's match. Ivy Nile and Maxine Dupree versus Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. This is a two-minute match with Candice and Indy Hartwell beating Ivy Nile and Maxine Dupree.
All I can say is a lot of energy for Maxine Dupree. That's it. A lot of energy for her. That reverse warm that she does is so entertaining. But, you know, other than that, short match, not much substance there.
Yeah, and they're trying to make the whole deal about the fans booing Maxine on, you know, from a house show a thing.
I heard you rant about that. I know.
It felt really forced. Well, it felt forced from what they tried to do this week. And I appreciate they're trying to bring something real in. I don't fault them for that. But it felt really forced in execution. I don't know, like, you know, Ivy Nile or, you know, whoever it was screaming at Maxine Dupree, you don't belong here. You know, it's like, you know, trying to just echo the fans and what some of them said to Maxine. But I don't know.
It was cringy.
Yeah, it sounded good on paper, but in execution, it was like, I don't want to watch this. Yeah.
Right.
So, moving on. Yeah. Let's go to the second hour here. And that was with, let's see, Priest calling for a match against R-Truth and The Miz, and Cole was in the ring setting up the Cody Rhodes interview, and they had a sit down, and that's when we got Cody breaking down in fake, really fake tears. I mean, I'm sorry. They were as fake can be. His voice sounded like he was crying, but you're looking at him and it just, I'm sorry. There were no tears. It's crocodile tears. And I heard this from Bully Ray on Busted Open Radio, and it's so true. If you're going to cry, cry. Don't half-ass it. Like, you can't half-ass crying and have the fans buy in. So I understand it's his mother. I can give it to my mom, not my dad, because obviously he's dad fast. I don't know. So to me, obviously not being a massive Cody Rhodes babyface fan, that it was a striking moment of just, oh, come on. So that's how I felt.
Yeah, same here. I was like, is he really crying?
Well, we had to watch that segment from the Titantron because when they were in the ring, his back was facing us, right? But as soon as he mentioned the line about the podcasters, Kimmy turned right to me. She turned right to me.
I was like, is he talking about? No.
I don't know. I mean, I doubt it, but at the same time, he's been kind of, I don't know. I mean, things have been said to him and he's saying things that do point to this show and others. Right. I mean, I'm not going to pretend.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah. There's been a lot of like verbatim things that we've said on the show that are echoing back on television. And I'm like, maybe, I don't know. Who knows? So, but how did you like the Cody Rhodes interview as a whole, beyond the fake tears and everything else, everything that Cody had to say with Michael Cole, did you feel it was effective?
I honestly tried not to laugh out loud when he started crying, or so to say fake cry, because there was a lot of people around us that were like, oh, Cody, like, don't cry. And yeah. I'm like holding in Kim, holding in.
Yeah, they were falling for it, definitely. There's just some people that undoubtedly, no matter what, they're going to sympathize with them. You know, WWE has done everything they can to make him the white knight, so to speak. But like she said, there were people that were, you know, just giving the sympathy. Oh, Cody, like, don't, you know, feeling bad for him, feeling sorry. So I know it's not working on us, you know, the hardcore true fans. I mean, they're all true fans, but the hardcore fans, like, we see right through it. But there are some fans that are just, in their eyes, Cody can do no wrong. So, for us, I felt like it did progress a little bit, but the tears, you know, the fake crying really killed it for me. Other than that, I like the idea of the Michael Cole interview. They just, the execution wasn't there for me.
Yeah, and The Rock just completely destroying Cody Rhodes about it was perfect. It was exactly what he needed to do. The Rock has been way more entertaining in this than Cody Rhodes has by a long shot. And The Rock, you know, making fun of him, I give it to my mommy, I give it to my daddy. Like, just, I love it. It was perfect. Because exactly, like, what? I'm sorry. What number one contender going into WrestleMania has had a little crying, like, who's crying on the road to WrestleMania as a champion? I understand it's, you know, nothing wrong with showing emotion and that kind of thing. But tell me, did The Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin or Triple H or The Undertaker, did any of them cry on the road to WrestleMania? I mean, I'm sorry. None of them. So I know it's a different time, but like, people haven't changed. We're all still the same. We're the same. We're all humans, just in a different time. And it didn't resonate with me. But if it did with some people, hey, then good, cool. But this is just an embodiment of what I can't stand about the babyface character of Cody. It's way too soft. It's way too sweet. It's too wholesome. And there's very rarely an edge from him. And it just totally continued to turn me off from his babyface character. At the same time, I can recognize he's a hell of a wrestler, and he's generally a good promo. So, this is a total turnoff for me. But let's continue. Go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, on a quick side note, I just thought of this when you were saying about him being so wholesome and, you know, just to the point of, like, makes you want to vomit sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a fan base out there, or maybe you felt the same way. Maybe at some point felt that way about Hogan. And then you had Hollywood Hogan, right, completely flipped the script. Do you think we'll ever get that from Cody, where he completely flips and becomes, you know, for lack of a better word, Hollywood Cody?
Yes. I not right now. And it may not happen for the next year or maybe even longer. They're going to milk this for everything they've gotten. And they should. The fans have been behind for Cody Rhodes since he came back to WWE 2 years ago, WrestleMania 38. So the fans have been totally behind him and milk that for everything it's worth. That's not a normal reaction for such a, for a star that comes back that was not a main eventer to begin with when he left. I mean, he was Stardust when he left, for God's sakes. And he comes back and the fans suddenly just pushed him to the main event and said, this is our guy. And they've been behind him unflinchingly ever since. So, yeah, to answer your question, yes, it's just not going to be probably for a little while. But I want to see what a heel Cody Rhodes looks like. I'm on board for that one. But it's just going to probably be at least, you know, a year, 2 years, depending on maybe more. I mean, seeing how long this goes. All right, another women's tag team match here, and we got the Kabuki Warriors and Kairi Sane versus Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark for the women's tag titles. This one ended in 10 minutes with the Kabuki Warriors defeating Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark to retain. Your thoughts?
That was our restroom break. I waited for them to get to the ring because I thought it was going to be something with Bayley, and then I was like, you know what, let's just go. I'll just watch it on a replay. But that was our Russian break, so we didn't actually catch it, and I did not get a chance to rewatch it. But just real quick on that, I guess, I don't know what it is necessarily, but the Kabuki Warriors with Dakota Kai look better without Bayley. I am a big Bayley fan. I'm glad they finally turned on her, and she's finally back to, you know, being a babyface Bayley. I think it was actually today I rewatched the day that she turned heel when she cut down the Bayley buddies. And just, I think some people don't remember or maybe they don't know, but don't remember how great Bayley is. And sometimes we just, because she's had the injury, it's kind of been in the shadow of the other two and Damage Control this whole time, with, you know, them becoming tag champs and Io becoming the champion. And, you know, she's been doing a lot of jobs for a lot of women. But I'm glad that she's finally getting, you know, she's got her Rumble win and she's going to get this title here at Mania. But ever since they turned on her, I feel like they're establishing the dominance for the new Damage Control. But the look of them, the presentation that they're doing, and now that they're giving subtitles to Io like they do with Shinsuke, I think that's helping. They should have done that for a long time. But if they continue that with Asuka and Zayn as the tag champions, I think they might be able to breathe some legitimacy into the women's tag title division.
I'm a man that works with his hands, and working with my hands means I own a lot of tools. And when you have a lot of tools, believe me, it's hard to keep up with where I bought them, how much they cost, and sometimes even where I put them. Well, until now. Now I use SiriSafe. SiriSafe not only helps me keep up with the serial numbers and receipts, but also if there's an extended warranty and where it's stored. I also use it to make notes, because a lot of people like to borrow my tools. Like my brother. This lets me know what he borrowed and how long ago he borrowed it, just in case he forgets to return it. SiriSafe, helping protect what's valuable to you.
Visit us at www.siri-safe.com. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram links are available on our website.
And I think legitimacy and consistency have been the two problems with that, those women's tag belts. So, you know, before they introduce another tag or another a championship, which I've heard a lot of people do, I want them to show me that they can handle the championships they have now before they add another one that they mismanage. So I'm all for the women's tag team championships. But like you said, Asuka and Kairi Sane, they need to be focused on a little bit more other than just part of this group that supports Io Sky because she's in a program with Bayley. But you're right. As well as far as Bayley leaving the group goes, it was almost addition by subtraction for that group, because the feeling the way they feel now, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this feels a lot better. Not only because Bayley felt like she was being overshadowed and kind of suppressed in that group where we all knew what Bayley could be, but also I feel like they were getting almost too many women in the group. It felt like there were 18 of them. I don't know why. It felt like there were so many of them in that group, even though there was what, five. For me, four is kind of the limit. You can do five on occasion, but in this case, Bayley, with how long she's been kind of suppressed and, you know, I don't know if misbooked is the right term, but put on the back burner. It's finally nice to see them put her at the forefront. And this past week, you know, having her also involved and, you know, getting involved with Kairi Sane and, or rather, Dakota Kai on SmackDown, which we'll get to, but I really have enjoyed what they've done the last couple weeks to further the Bayley Io Sky story that a lot of people have up until the last couple weeks have kind of, you know, not forgotten, but it hasn't been a big point of discussion, even though she's the Royal Rumble winner. Like, she won the Royal Rumble and, you know, everyone's talking about Rock Roman and Seth and Cody. And so, yeah, but it's just nice to see. And another, I mean, you could go on talking about the effects of this group, but Asuka's another one where you look at her and go, boy, you talk about somebody just disappearing, you know, like, I mean, Asuka, who has been, you know, at times a main eventer, even main evented with Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania in one of the greatest matches at WrestleMania for the women. And then she goes and just disappears. I mean, in this group, and eventually they'll break up and all that. But I mean, just think about where Asuka's kind of fallen to as well, being in this group. And I don't know, it's got its good and bad. I have no issue with this group now that Bayley's gone. But there's a lot of effects that this has had so far in the women's division.
That was one thing I was thinking. You know, I'm not a fan of Bayley. I'm sorry. But I did notice, you know, she is a Royal Rumble winner, but I feel like they don't really advertise her as a winner. So if you look at the posters for WrestleMania, like, who's on there? Like, you don't see Bayley at all. So, I mean, I wonder why they do that.
I think that, well, you're right. I mean, it's not exactly an equal representation here when it comes to Bayley being put on, like, you know, a lot of the men are. And I think on a lot of the promotional material, you'll see Rhea Ripley, who they know is hot right now. A lot of times they'll go with the hot hand, you know, who's been over consistently for the last, you know, year. Who have the fans really gravitated to? Like, they have their finger on the pulse of what the fans do and don't like. As much as they sometimes don't show it in their booking, I think it's just a matter of who's hot over the last X number of months or year or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they go with that person. Bayley hasn't been. I mean, Bayley has been a background figure for a long time that they're now just bringing back into the fold. So it makes sense from that perspective. And it seems like that is more important to them than, oh, well, we definitely have to put her on here because she's a Royal Rumble winner. They look at more who's hot right now.
Real quick, do you think, and I just had this sneaky suspicion right now, with Bayley being, you know, in so to speak, in the shadow for this whole, what, it's been a year and a half, 2 years since they debuted as Damage Control.
Yep.
Do you think that this was the plan the whole time for them to debut together as a group and then Bayley to get her, you know, get them over as tag champs, then Bayley to be a jobber just for her to win the Rumble and then spring back into being a babyface with the intention of fighting Io, who was essentially the, you know, one of the wrestlers she brought into her group.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it may have been, you know, the long-term booking this whole year and a half, 2 years since they debuted.
That could be. I also think that they didn't expect it to go this long, though, because there were so many times where like, yeah, this group is done. It's boring. It's over. It's, you know, they need to break up. They should break up. Oh, you know, and they just kept it going and kept it going and it kept it going.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But I think they did it out of, we don't have anything else for them. Let's just keep pushing rather than, oh, man, guys, we've got this really cool story arc that's 2 years long. No, I don't think there's a chance. Especially when Vince was still in charge back at that point, when everything was kind of being hot-shotted and, you know, you hear scripts being torn up 10 minutes before the show and all this nonsense. Vince couldn't book, you know, 15 minutes in front of his face consistently and logically instead of, you know, 2 years. So I think ultimately the premise of the group was probably formed with Bayley eventually getting turned on and eventually turning babyface. You know, and that was probably the intention, but I don't think they intended it to go this long with this kind of like convoluted story arc. Although I think generally they wanted to Bayley eventually to come back as a baby face after getting turned on. So, all right, well, let's continue. We've got Damian Priest and R-Truth. Damian Priest beats R-Truth in 8 minutes. How did the crowd, like this one? It seemed that they were involved at certain points in this match.
Oh, everybody was definitely booing.
R-Truth, for all his glory, his WhatsApp catchphrase is the most universal catchphrase in any city that man is at. It doesn't matter where he's at. That catchphrase, for the last, 20 plus years, he still gets the same ovation, the same pop for that WhatsApp chat. It don't matter where he's at. And he's so over with the crowd again. I mean, he's been in our hearts for so long, but now that he's getting some spotlight, like she just said, the booing was. Did it translate on screen? The overwhelming booing there?
Yeah, it did.
Yes. People were just, I mean, Damien's doing some good work with the heel tactics and drawing heat. And, you know, Truth is such a sympathetic character that since he's relatable, that heat is coming off genuine. So I wouldn't be surprised if Damien Priest is possibly getting death threats or you know, maybe some bricks thrown at his home somewhere. But Truth is just, they need to put a title on this man. I don't care which title. Just give this man something to add to his legacy besides that 24/7 title.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, I've been advocating for R-Truth for a long time.
Yeah, I hear you.
Man, he's just, that's the connection with the crowd that you dream of as a wrestler. And it's just, for R-Truth, for some reason, they haven't been able to put it together with the timing or maybe his age or the plans or I don't know what. But that connection with the crowd is something special that you can't duplicate. You can't try to force to happen. Either it happens or it doesn't. And I would argue that there's some baby faces in existence right now that don't have as good of a connection with the fans as R-Truth does, who's what, like 53 years old and can still wrestle like he's 23? Mm-hmm. The man is just, he has got that connection that is rare. He is a lovable character. He wrestles. He's got a good catchphrase. His entrance music is fun. He's got all the tools and all everything on paper. It's just, I don't know, maybe outside of a tag team title win, which I think is possible with The Miz at WrestleMania, that they have any plans for a singles title victory for R-Truth, which is a shame. I would love to see it, even if it's for like a week, as kind of like a way to reward Truth for all of his contributions and the connection with the fans. And I think the fans, imagine if R-Truth got a title match, like a world title match, he somehow stepped his way into it. The fans would lose their minds.
They would. Now, speaking of stepping into it, I've heard you advocate for Chelsea Green to win Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
How that could be fun with a lot of failed cash-ins and her personality. What if Truth won Money in the Bank? He could string that along, have a lot of, you know, funny moments, a lot of close moments, and whether it'll be whether they give that title or not, or they can draw extra heat and have them have a failed cash-in. But that could be a lot of fun, I think, if you were to give those two superstars the Money in the Bank. Unlikely underdogs, but I think they could both, you know, give us a lot of entertainment. And for a full year that they hold that case, you know, up to a year, they could give us a lot of entertainment moments if they were considered giving either one of them that Money in the Bank briefcase.
They could do that. I mean, I think Chelsea Green's more likely, only because, again, I don't know if they want the men's side of the Money in the Bank briefcase to be looked at as a, you know, a comedy piece for a year. You know, at the same time, I think the fans, again, would really take to it and really wonder, can R-Truth do this? Maybe they should. And if you're going to do it with Truth, don't have it be a failed cash-in, like, because then the payoff is just that was being used as a comedy bit for, you know, however many months. So if you're going to do it with R-Truth, let him cash in on any title he wants, have him be successful, and he has a short reign. I'm not advocating for even a multi-month reign, just a short reign to reward him, have the fans finally have the moment with R-Truth before he retires. The man is not a young man. So that is how I would do it if you're going to do it with R-Truth. It's just, it's got to be successful. So, all right, let's continue. We have Gunther. He was being interviewed backstage. He just going on about his 640 days. And the next match we got was Sami Zayn, Ricochet, Shinsuke, Bronson Reed, JD McDonagh, Chad Gable, gauntlet match, the main event for a shot at the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania. Obviously, Sami wins here, but I'll just let you take it.
The moment they announced that match the previous week, I was so excited knowing that we were going to get a wrestling clinic. Mrs. Rocketeer didn't know what a gauntlet match was, so I explained it to her, and especially when it was going on. And
I just didn't know that's what it was called. But
right. So when she saw the six men on the screen, when they were advertising the match, when the match started, she's like, where are the other four guys? And then I explained to her the rules of a gauntlet match. Yeah. But, you know, with the time that it started, I think it was like, what, like a 40-minute match from start to finish, maybe? Yep. Yeah. So I knew when it started, the time they allotted for it, that it was going to be a great match. I have definitely heard you, you know, saying that Chad should be the guy. And I did partially agree with you because of the story he had with his daughter and because of the wrestling classes that we did get with him and Gunther previously. And him being the only one to get the victory over Gunther, even though it was a count-out victory. Has Sami ever had a chance against Gunther? I'm blanking on that. This be his first opportunity.
I don't think he has. What, for the IC title? No, I don't think so. No.
So that's the one thing that made me lean towards Sammy's victory. Mm-hmm. I would have chosen Sami to win. I do agree with you about they should have crowned Sami with the victory against Roman. And I know the tag title victory last year was sort of a consolation prize. I'm wondering if this is an extra consolation prize that they're giving him. I do believe he's believable to beat Gunther. He's got the tenure. He's got the in-ring ability. He's got the fan support. And is it going to make him 4-time champion if he wins? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know.
I'm not sure either, but either way, I think this, I don't see a need for Gunther to win at Mania again. He won last year. I see Mania is a, you know, usually end of storylines at the beginning, you know, on the Raw after Mania, we usually start, you know, the new season, so to speak. So I think Gunther losing is the right thing here. But the match overall was just, it was just so exciting. I mean, just every guy gave their heart out. And that's really what you want from your competitors, especially when they're competing for a number one contendership, which I don't think we get enough number one contender matches. You get a lot of guys attacking people and just saying, okay, you get a title match. I'm not in favor for that at all. I really miss when you'd have the two guys in the middle of the ring, they would be announced, and then you would have the number one contendership graphic come up on the screen, and it felt big time. This match felt big time again, because we are on the road to Mania, and you're crowning that number one contender, and the crowd was so behind Sammy.
Those are really good.
They were so behind him, especially when after the Bronson Reed splash.
Yeah. For him to even come back and start beating up on Sammy again, like even after he was eliminated, I really thought Sammy was done.
The crowd, you could feel the crowd whenever he hit that splash. You felt them, the gasp in the crowd. And I felt like a lot of people's thoughts shifted. Or they thought Sammy was going to win. And then after the splash, they're like, no, he's not going to win. There's no way he can pull it off. And that would have kind of made it okay for some people to accept Sammy's defeat that way. But him persevering and getting the victory, I think, helps the story so much more.
I don't hate the Sammy victory. I think it makes total sense. It's a fresh matchup. We've seen Gunther and Gable before.
Right.
And Sammy on paper is a bigger star than Gable is. I mean, given that everything that Sammy's done over the last couple of years, it's Sammy Zayn's a bigger star, and they're going with the bigger star and the fresher matchup. And I'm not faulting them for that at all. I think I'm looking at this from, there is a bit of an emotional story for Gable with his daughter, and it was very believable. And the fact that they have had every time that him and Gunther have clashed, it has been absolutely classic. They have a hell of a chemistry. They are just pure wrestlers to their core, not flashy, just about the physicality, and they have a sense of authenticity to them. And I've loved every match they've had. I go, imagine what they could do at WrestleMania if, you know, they did their previous matches on a lesser platform. So, you know, that's the story. And there's been a lot of backlash from fans towards Sammy. And, you know, I understand why, but we're still getting a heck of a match with Sammy and Gunther. And also, I think it's possible that we have Gable still weasel his way into it, make it a triple threat. I think it's possible, although they've now made the United States title match a triple threat. You have a multi-team, a six-pack challenge for the tag team championships. You know, so there's already that multi-man match type of card going on at WrestleMania. So I don't know if Gable will be able to sneak his way in. But would you even want that? Would you even want Gable to sneak in? Or would you still want it to just stay Sammy versus Gunther at WrestleMania?
I say no, because we saw a triple threat for that title last year.
Right.
And I think I don't want Gunther to lose the title not being pinned. Whoever takes the title off of him needs to be definitive. And I think Sammy's a big enough star to do it. I think his work with the Bloodline story, you know, it wrote itself with the victory over the tag titles last year. And then him having another title win at back-to-back Mania. I think it's like, in a way, it's consolation prize, but I also think they're actually rewarding him for, you know, that career work he did with the Bloodline. You know, previous to that, you know, he was doing that conspiracy theory gimmick for a while, and it was getting a little stale, but I think that Bloodline story really turned it around for him. And so much, like the crowd, like during the final moments of that match, when you thought he was going to tap out, the upper deck and the nosebleeds, they were stomping so loud in the arena that you could hear the you know, the thumping just all the way around. So they were truly, truly behind Sammy towards the end of that match.
I thought it was raining.
Yeah. We you know the sound on your roof the rug hit. That's what it sounded like.
Wow.
Inside. It was so over, and it was just the nosebleeds. It wasn't like the crowd with the section we were at or the floor seats. It was the nosebleed seats that were just thunderous.
You do not hear that often. A lot of times the upper deck is quieter because they're more removed from the action. You don't feel as a part of it as much. So that tells you something right there, that, you know, given that there was no story with Sammy and Sammy's Chad and Sami Zayn going into the match. And all of a sudden they're able to bring you in with almost no story and just having it be a pure wrestling match. Like, that's what pro wrestling is. And yes, the story's fun, the promos are fun and absolutely necessary for most programs, but also the wrestlers can do their own talking in the ring and bring you in without even saying a word. And that's what's great about wrestling that a lot of other sports don't have. So I loved this ending here, even though it wasn't what I would have chosen. I understand it. And if Gable doesn't come into this triple threat or make it a triple threat, I honestly don't know what they're going to do with Gable, who just continues to impress every single time he's out there. And I just don't know if they're going to put him in some useless battle royal or maybe not even have a spot at all. Or he could go into the tag team match with Otis. That's possible too. But I just hope they do something with Chad Gable if they don't put him in the triple threat or in the IC title match. So that's my only concern is he keeps having awesome match after awesome match. And then they just, thanks for coming. You know, we'll see you. We'll see you after WrestleMania. We'll find something for you. That's my concern.
I hear you. Right. Yeah. Just a last bit about Raw. After the show ended, Sammy grabs the mic and he was just kind of pumping up Houston, like, thank you for being such a great crowd. Thank you for always being a great city and just pumping us up and giving us that real, you know, we're already going home happy with his victory. But he had got on the mic for about 2 minutes and just pumped up the city and, you know, just basically just saying how it was a great town for wrestling to come to and how they love coming to Houston to perform for us.
So there were no matches afterwards? Okay.
Nothing extra. Just Sammy on the mic.
And you guys stay till the very end. And yeah. I'd imagine traffic is always fun afterwards, or getting out of a parking garage is always fun.
So we don't play around with traffic. We literally park right across the street from the stadium. And we pay the extra bucks to park right across the street from the stadium.
Oh, probably totally worth every dollar, I'm sure, too.
$50. It's $50 for parking, but it's worth it to not have to walk a couple blocks and really get in the traffic, right? So
it was fun getting out. Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah. Well, let's see here. So let's go over SmackDown. Well, we still got a little time left. Let's do a little bit of SmackDown, and then we'll wrap it up here. I know we talked about The Rock. We talked about his heel character a little bit, and he had a rock concert that he did on Friday night, which, I mean, it just pure joy. And then changing his music to the heel music from 03, where he, you know, it was all set up perfectly where he was standing there with the lightning bolts. And that's awesome, an awesome entrance in and of itself. And then his music started playing and he just smiled and the fans popped. And it's like, this is, you know, I don't even know if The Rock is a heel at this point. I mean, seriously, just because I know they're booking him as a heel and, you know, the fans at times boo him, but he's getting more of a positive reaction by a large margin than he is getting booed. And I think a lot of it's nostalgic. A lot of it is, man, this is way better than the other version that you usually bring to the table. He's all in. The Rock is entertaining. He's being edgy. He's like, there's nothing bad about this character. So I think even just if they don't want it to happen, that the Rock is probably going to get more cheers than boos. But did you guys enjoy the Rock concert? What, you know, the insults he hurled at Cody Rhodes and Cody Rhodes' mother, and what he's going to do with the belt, and he's going to hand it to his mother covered in his son's blood. And I mean, just crazy stuff. Did you guys enjoy the Rock concert?
That was hilarious. First of all, I just think a lot of people think that he's so bad. I mean, because of what's going on. I don't know. I don't think he's bad. I just think that he's just being who he is.
So the concert's classic. It is nostalgic, and it's. I think we were waiting for it to happen eventually. And like I mentioned to you before we started recording, this promo in particular, besides the one from last week and or 2 weeks ago in Arizona, it's really making me kind of feel like The Rock may be kind of ushering the PG-14 era to an extent. We know he's on the board. And we know he kind of follows his own set of rules compared to the guys in the locker room. And I think you were kind of breaking that down to us of why that is. And it does make sense. But bringing Cody's mama into it, the personal level that he's trying to add, you know, the personal factor that he's adding, bringing in the family, I think it's a nice touch. These things, we know that, you know, with it being a work, you know, extent that, you know, Cody agreed to an extent to let him say what he said, right? But we know The Rock does play by his own rules. So everything that he's doing, yeah, he was booed the night that he joined the Bloodline. But now that he's bashing the crowds, it's already become so endearing that the boos have turned to cheers. And with the adult males like ourselves who are getting that nostalgic feel from the Attitude Era, I think that whenever the men are cheering in the crowd and then the women are cheering in the crowd because of The Rock's looks or whatever, that that's translating to their kids. So the kids are cheering. So the cheers are getting louder because just overall, The Rock, you know, it is hard to boo him because he's so great on the mic. He always has been. That's what partially made him turn him babyface in the first place back in the day. He was so great on the mic that, you know, the fans organically turned, you know, babyface for him, or I mean, in favor for him turning babyface. So I hope we get as much as we can out of him. This may have been, if it had gone the other way, and if it was Roman versus Rock at Mania, it may have been the end. We might have not have seen him anymore. But with the code We Want Cody chance, it may be a blessing in disguise that maybe they're going to extend it longer and, you know, we'll have The Rock more. So we'll see, you know, what time that'll definitely show us and tell us what it's going to be. But like I told you, I think the blessing in disguise of us wanting Cody and getting Hollywood Rock was kind of, you know, the best thing, the best turn of things.
It was something that I didn't know I wanted again. And
right.
Yeah, it's exceeded my expectations because typically The Rock comes in and again, he's Dwayne Johnson that you can tell he's trying to pretend he's playing The Rock again. He doesn't feel 100%. He always, you know, kind of breaks the fourth wall. Like he's The Rock and you'll cheer him, but it's been kind of just, you know what you're going to get with The Rock return. And this is a much more invested, like, I want to see The Rock every week on TV. I mean, I don't want this to end. I don't want this character to go away, and I want it to continue because it's so much fun. So, you know, eventually he'll switch back, I would think, when Roman turns on him, if he turns on him at WrestleMania. I think there's going to be some big, big hints there. But ultimately, this is just, I mean, I'm soaking in every second of it because it's not going to last long. And The Rock is, you know, of course, he's only doing this because the fans are bringing him back. This is not like a, well, The Rock's going to be back for 2 years. No, like, unfortunately, this is a very, you know, kind of a short-lived thing, and we all have to recognize that it's just something that we should enjoy. And the one thing I hope that happens at WrestleMania is that he goes full Hollywood and does the full entrance from the beginning of, like, the helicopter over the city and does, like, the full Hollywood Rock deal and completes the entrance for the WrestleMania, but we'll see. But yeah, overall, I'm loving this, and I think that, what The Rock does at WrestleMania is going to be talked about. But I think even more so is, you know, obviously the stipulations that are going to result in night two. Do you, let me just ask you quickly, then we'll move on to the matches themselves and wrap up. What do you think is going to happen when it comes to the bloodline rules? Do you think they're actually going to, Seth and Cody are going to lose and there'll be bloodline rules? Or do you think it's actually going to be just one-on-one, no interference?
I played this scenario in my head for both cases, right? For bloodline rules and for without. And I've heard, you know, you and Anthony talk about it, and I've heard you talk about it. And the idea of bloodline rules and having some backup with Cody, the fear of the overbooking is what, that's my fear, that they're going to overbook it. I don't necessarily like multi-man matches, especially at Mania. And I don't like any, you know, hanky-panky at Mania. It should be a one-on-one. It should be a clean victory, whether it's in favor of the heel or favor in the babyface. Just like, for example, was it last year, Austin Theory's victory over Cena. I didn't like that the way he won. Mania matches should be, you know, straight up one-on-one or straight up tag teams. And the best team wins or the best man wins. It's Mania. It's the Super Bowl of wrestling. It's still, you know, the biggest night of, or biggest nights of the year. And so in the sense of bloodline rules, I would be excited. The one thing that leans me towards the blind rules scenario is if we get a stunner on Rock, right, from Austin. And Austin return with the stunner. That would make the overbooking worth it for me. Otherwise, I don't think it'd be worth it. I may be okay with the John Cena AA on Rock, but I don't know. But I'm the other way, if it's just straight up one-on-one, that you know, it's more traditional. And I know some of, like Anthony, but yourself would prefer a one-on-one match. I think because we got the one-on-one match last year with that interference, I think this one should be, I'm leaning toward 51% for no bloodline rules, one-on-one straight up, Cody gets the victory. But I'm 49% for that bloodline rules, because then everybody gets involved. And, with that glass shattering, it may be worth it. It's WrestleMania 40. Right. I mean,
and they like to leave themselves a lot of creative options, and you really limit the creative options if everyone's barred from ringside and it's in writing and all the lawyers get involved and they have a big to do about it. Then it is just Roman and Cody. But I think they look at it as a better story for Cody to now have to overcome not just Roman Reigns, but it's anything goes. Anyone can interfere. There's no disqualification. It's a bigger hill for Cody to climb that when he ultimately does is more satisfying. On top of the fact that I can't believe I'm predicting this in 2024 that The Rock is going to get stunned by Stone Cold Steve Austin. I absolutely believe that, because you talk about a moment, that is just something you never, ever thought you'd see again. And it makes sense for it to happen. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, The Rock overselling the stunner is going to be hilarious. Now, if they don't do it, I'm going to be super disappointed. But it makes sense for that to happen. And that's the only thing, as you said, that's kind of selling me on it. You could have Cena interfere. You could have Jay. And you could have but that's where you get overbooked. It just needs to be one guy coming out to clear the deck, stunning everybody, except Roman. Leave Roman alone for Cody. And then, the crowd goes crazy. Cody hits a crossroads, 1, 2, 3, new champion. Austin didn't help Cody other than just get rid of the excess that were, that unfairly was, interfering in the match. And I think then you're golden. But yeah, I don't know. I keep talking myself into it as if it's going to be happening, and then I'm going to be super disappointed when it doesn't. But, oh man.
Well, if we get bloodline rules, I think the way it should, I think Rock needs to pin Cody. So you protect Seth for that championship match he's going to have with Drew. And then with Rock pinning Cody, then that would, the victory over, assuming the victory over Roman, would, I think it'd mean just that much more, right? Because the Rock is the one who laid down the challenge, laid down the stipulation. You have him pin Cody. Whatever shenanigans happens, you have him pin Cody. And that adds a little bit more fire, a little bit more fuel to the fire. But then ultimately, Cody overcomes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think either way, the fact that Cody, he doesn't win, I mean, he has to now, because The Rock said that if you don't win, you're never going to get another shot because I'm on the board. So they can't ever not have Cody get another shot. So, this is kind of a 99.9% chance of Cody winning. Right. Again, part of me does want to see what the fans do if he doesn't. I mean, there's a real big part of me to see what Twitter looks like when Cody loses that match, and just to see the reaction. I mean, imagine if it's just Roman Reigns standing there holding the belt with the fireworks going off and that's it. Imagine. I mean, so I mean, the fans would probably go into convulsions. So, all right, well, let's continue on here just with the rest of SmackDown very quickly. We had the LWO, Joaquin Wilde and Del Toro versus Legado del Fantasma. WrestleMania tag team qualifier for this six-pack challenge with Angel and Humberto beating Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro in about 9 minutes. What did you think about the fact that Angel and Humberto moved on?
Expected it. LWO kind of had their time to shine, this past year or leading up to now. I think ever since last year with Puerto Rico Backlash, they've kind of been at the forefront of most of the matches and stuff. So I think this is the right move, have them put over the new faction with Santos. All the guys are talented. So I think this was the right move, and we'll see if Garza and Alberto actually get some credible wins going in for the rest of the year. But I think they're going to have a nice showing in that ladder match.
And what did you think about LA Knight when he cut his promo on AJ Styles, and very impassioned promo from AJ on AJ, but then AJ attacks him from behind after he challenged him to a match at WrestleMania, hits him in the back with a chair, sits on his neck, tells him he accepts. What did you think about this?
That was great. I really like the dark side of AJ. I like AJ no matter what he does, but I like the dark side of AJ and him going heel. I'm a heel through and through. So anytime one of my favorites turns heel, especially from a long babyface run, I really get behind them. So this one might not steal the show. I think some people are going to forget about it, but it's definitely going to be an entertainment match.
Yeah, I mean, even though a lot of us were hoping for LA Knight to be in a championship match, him and AJ Styles, I mean, think about where LA Knight was just a year ago and go, okay, you'd sign up for this any day. Like, if you were to say that when LA Knight was getting no reaction or he was, in that the whole Maxxine Dupree thing, that you would have signed up for this, you would have in a heartbeat. You know, it's not a championship, but still, it's a prominent match with one of the greatest wrestlers of all time in AJ Styles. It's still going to be a fun match. I would agree. All right.
Yeah.
Randy Orton, Grayson Waller. And Randy Orton beats Grayson Waller in 7 minutes and 20 seconds with an RKO. But I mean, first of all, I don't even know the last time Grayson Waller won a match one-on-one, which is interesting. But Randy Orton wins, as he should have. And after the match, Theory and Orton attacked. And Logan Paul got on the ring and was about to hit a knockout punch, but KO was able to come in and run off the heels. And then we got a stunner into an RKO. What did you think about this?
So always fun when there's something with KO or Randy on camera, because you're either going to get a stunner or you're going to get an RKO, right? They're always great on the mic. Everything going on with Logan Paul, I think the triple match that we're going to get is the best they could do with Orton, so the whole workload is not on him. But with Waller, yeah, you're right. He hasn't won a match, but I think that was part of – I think maybe he may have been moved up too soon. Because he was never NXT champion. He was there for, for a short cup of coffee. But I think because of his talent, his ability on the mic, and his the in-ring ability, basically moving him up to be sort of like a glorified jobber, I think his in-ring ability makes him seem credible, even though we know he's a jobber right now in this time. So this was just a little, little match to keep Randy warm, which is what they're going to do with him probably the rest of his career, give him some, little warm-up matches here and there. But I'm really interested to see what's going to happen in this Mania match. I don't see Logan retaining. And correct me if I'm wrong, has Orton never won the United States title, or has he?
Ah, that's a good question. I don't know.
Because if he hasn't, this is going to make him a Grand Slam champion.
I don't
recall. I don't recall. I didn't do my research on it, but let's assume that he hasn't, right? If he were to win this one, which may be one of his, last main event, WrestleMania victories. We don't know if they'll ever give him that 15th championship, but this would definitely, he's already Hall of Famer first ballot. This is not going to cement his legacy, but it could add him to the list of Grand Slam champions.
Well, I just Googled it, and he has won it. He won it in 2018. Mm-hmm. So he's okay. The 18th overall Grand Slam champion.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's already there. So, yeah, this wouldn't really do much for Randy to win. I mean, I'm all for it because he's Randy Orton, but
then how would you feel about Logan Paul pinning Randy to retain and then being able to use that in the future, saying, I pin Randy Orton at Mania?
I love it. I love it. I mean, I actually am advocating for Logan Paul. As much as I hate his character, I hate it in the way that I want to see him get his ass kicked, which is how I should hate it. I would advocate for that, because a victory over Randy Orton at WrestleMania is a big deal. And Logan Paul is just starting to settle into himself. He kind of understands who and what he is. He's on a heck of a run. Now, I don't need another absentee champion, but he's there enough to make you annoyed by him and remind you that he's US champion. So I would argue that Orton doesn't need the belt, and it should stay around the waist of Logan Paul. I don't care if it's brass knucks, how he does it. I think it's more important for Randy Orton to not win, and it's more important for Logan Paul for his momentum to retain, really.
I agree.
All right, let's continue. And the next matchup here is, Dragon Lee. And Dragon Lee versus Santos Escobar. It was a very quick match with Santos defeating Dragon Lee in about 2 minutes. But after the match, this is what it was really about, with the LDF ran in and beat down Lee. Carlito came in for the save to take out Angel and Umberto. And then, of course, Ray comes out, and he went up for a 619 on Santos, but he was saved, or rather he saved himself, and then challenged him to a match next week. So your thoughts?
So the match, well, anything, I love Escobar. Dragon Lee's growing on me too. He's a great young talent. So just real quick, I think this is going to culminate probably with the multi-man match at probably the pre-show at Mania with Escobar and his team going over. And I mean, we'll see what happens with the match next week. I don't see a definitive finish. I see a DQ finish, and with both teams running in and just with a brawl, right? A breakout brawl, and then somebody lays down, either Ray or Escobar lays down the challenge for Phantasma to go get the LWO at Mania, because we did hear Escobar stating, I think a couple weeks ago, that they were wanting to end LWO, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes. I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, I think that's a solid prediction. And yeah, they probably will not make it onto the main show. It could be a very, very much a pre-show. Yeah. All right, New Catch Republic versus Pretty Deadly. This match was 11 minutes, and New Catch Republic beats Pretty Deadly. And your thoughts?
That one, I think I was falling asleep when I watched that one. but we did finish watching it. These teams are both great, great teams, talented men. Mrs. Rocky T doesn't like Bud or Pete Dunne. She thinks that when he breaks his finger, she thinks it looks dumb. I don't know why. I think it looks cool.
But that's always his go-to. He just goes to fingers, and I'm like, oh my gosh, here we go again.
but overall, just a pretty typical standard, decent match. And we'll see what the outcome is with this tag team title match. I don't think any of them are gonna win, but they're still gonna have a very decent showing. Just like most of the time they're in the ring.
Oh yeah, that honestly, that six pack challenge for the tag team titles is gonna be a car crash, and I mean that in the best way. It's gonna be absolutely, it's gonna be insane. So yeah. All right. Well, in the main event here, final match, Dakota Kai takes on Bayley, and Bayley and Dakota Kai. It was really a non finish here. It ended in about 7 minutes. Because Io Sky got involved and put her hands on Bayley. Naomi comes out to try to make the save, but she was put down, and Damage Control stands tall with another failed effort by Bayley, and more heat on the group of Damage Control. So what were your both of your thoughts?
I kind of felt like it was going to end like that with her and Dakota going up. I didn't feel that there was going to be a clean finish. I believe this is the way it's going to be for the next few weeks until Mania. Just Bayley coming up short. They're just trying to add, they're playing the numbers game. You got Naomi coming out this week. You may have somebody, a third person come out in the following weeks to back up Bayley or at Mania. We are, 99% sure that Bayley's going to take this victory, which she should. So overall, this was very predictable for me. I'm always excited to see Bayley on my screen, even though Mr. Rocky T doesn't like her. But she's growing on her now that she's kind of got some of her back history a little bit. Just a little bit. Okay. She doesn't like her character that much, but she did feel sympathy when they initially turned on her. So yeah. She did.
She deserved it.
So you felt something. Okay.
She did. She's always felt some disdain towards Bayley because her voice is annoying to her, but she did feel a little sympathy, even if it was the slightest shred. But I'm glad, like you had mentioned, I think on your last time you were on, I think I was maybe on the mailbag, I'm not sure, but you had mentioned that it was a big deal that they ended the show that way with the women's title as, the main event and being, building that storyline. So that was very...
I was actually surprised that it was a women's match that wasn't...
That was last, yeah. So that was good to see that they're given it the main event, because you imagine that, and the main event of any Raw or SmackDown is when the viewership may go up, so there may be some more eyeballs on that storyline, which could build some more emotional interest.
Oh yeah, I mean, SmackDown has better ratings than Raw right now, and rightfully so, with all the star power and really just overall success they've had as a show for the last couple of years. And so yeah, I think more eyeballs are going to see the Bayley and Io program and say, hey, this wasn't something I was interested in, but maybe it is now. They have done a nice job making it feel important, over the last couple of weeks where it was almost forgotten for a while. And the heat on Io and that group is building to, you know, it's for me, I know that, you know, if you don't care about Bailey, then that's a different story. But if you do, you look at this and say, man, we need somebody to come in and just beat them down. We need, you know, you're looking for that group to just meet what, you know, meet their fate, and they haven't yet. And I think it's a nice build of a heel heat towards WrestleMania. It's a formula that's tried and true, and I think it's working. So, you know, Bailey's going to have to find another partner here to help take out Damage Control and even the odds a bit, because right now it's really 4-on-2. But I like it. And like I, you know, you mentioned, I do like the fact that they have put this at the end of the show. That tells you what they're, you know, where their priorities lie for that week. And this was the right place for this, for the women's championship here. That, I mean, there's just no chance Io Sky retains. There's just none. I mean, I can't imagine a world in which Io Sky retains.
No, but Bailey's paid her dues, coming back from the injury, putting this Damage Control team over, being a jobber and putting over some of the other talent over the last, you know, year and a half. This is definitely something she deserves. And, you know, rightfully so, being the Royal Rumble winner, and she's already a Grand Slam champion. So, you know, she's going to add to her legacy. And, you know, I think if we stopped her career now before WrestleMania, she's a Hall of Fame, but this is just going to cement it, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Well, before we wrap up, I mean, the floor is either of yours. If you have any thoughts really on anything else that we didn't hit on or comments, go ahead.
Well, no, I think we covered everything. I just want to give a shout out to the Gardner, Michael Gross, and to the rest of Magic team. You know, it's been a lot for me the last few months since I been enrolled in school and taking on responsibilities with my mom and stuff. So haven't been available to even talk to or produce anything much. So I'm grateful for the team still putting some things out for you and for the listeners. I did want to give two fun facts here. This day in history, March 17th, 2002, WrestleMania 18, The Rock versus Hogan took place. Mm. And a few years ago, 2021, LA made his NXT in-ring debut on this day in history. So that's a little bit there. You know, thanks for having us on. Miss Rocky T is a little burnt out too, so she wasn't talking so much and she was a little bit nervous. But, well, you know, we're glad to be here with you. And, you know, we're all, you know, especially me, I mean, we're always listening.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate you guys taking the time. I know it's, you know, late for everyone tonight, and it's a Sunday night, and, you know, here comes the work week. So I appreciate it. And, you know, life always gets in the way, it seems, when you're, you know, of the fun things you want to do. But, you know, obviously you guys have a place here anytime you want to come on. And I appreciate you both taking the time tonight to chat. And I'm glad you had a good time at Raw.
Thank you. And real quick, this week, WrestleMagic will be having a release. Our new episode is titled Defectors That Changed the Ring. So we're just going to be touching base on, you know, some guys who jumped ship throughout the years who made either immediate or long-term impact. We actually have Justin Credible on this episode as well. We planned it to be a 30-minute episode. It turned into an hour. And that hour is going to turn into a two-parter. So this week we should have that ready for y'all to listen to. And thanks again, Matt, for having us.
Awesome. Well, yeah, looking forward to it. And again, thank you both for coming on tonight. And we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you. Y'all have a good night.
I'm a man that works with his hands. And working with my hands means I own a lot of tools. And when you have a lot of tools, believe me, it's hard to keep up with where I bought them, how much they cost, and sometimes even where I put them. Well, until now. Now I use SiriSafe. SiriSafe not only helps me keep up with the serial numbers and receipts, but also if there's an extended warranty and where it's stored. I also use it to make notes, because a lot of people like to borrow my tools, like my brother. This lets me know what he borrowed and how long ago he borrowed it, just in case he forgets to return it. SiriSafe, helping protect what's valuable to you.
Visit us at www.siri-safe.com. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram links are available on our website.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.